biggest challenge for scale now is just the fact that it's become almost like you really have to find smaller deals and just kind of create your own portfolio that way. Because anything over like 15 million, you're just going to compete with Wall Street. And they're just trying to buy it. Like the Carlyle groups, all these big private equity, they're just rolling them up and they're not even make profit for 3-4 years and then they'll get exit out. So it's getting super, super competitive. Like I was just posting on my Instagram today. I was like, I used to be able to say I got offered great returns. Now I can just say I have the most expensive real estate.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jonathan Tuttle is host of the Accredited Investor Podcast. He's also the fund manager at Midwest Park Capital, which invests in mobile home parks. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you tell me in 90 seconds or less, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, well, I kind of grew up in a real estate family. So as a kid, I'd be working on the job sites or helping my dad on the job sites. So even from like 5 or 6. In my 20s, I did retail sales for like half a decade and then got into real estate brokering about a decade ago and then transitioned over to acquisitions.
Got it. That's a lot of fun. When you say you transitioned over to acquisitions, what does that mean and how did you pick the asset class?
You basically stumbled across the industry about 15 years ago, mobile home parks. And at that time, it was kind of like, nobody, you talk to anybody, they're like, what are you talking about? This is like 2005, 2006. It was like, right. This is way early. By that time, it was kind of like, I saw my dad during the last downturn. We had other real estate. And as we know, most people got crushed from like 2007 to like 11. And that was the only asset class, the only real estate that ours that did really, really well. We actually did exceedingly well. And then at the same time, we started seeing like, wow, this is an asset class, no matter what the goes on in the world, even if it's crazy, it does really well. And that's really just kind of sparked my interest in mobile home parks.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Buying in 05 is a brilliant time to be buying mobile home parks. Yeah, it's funny how attractive the asset class has become. You know, before it was like, oh, you're buying what? And now it's, that really makes a heck of a lot of sense. Yeah. I think removing a lot of the stigma around mobile home parks too has been really good for the industry. Talk to us about, you know, getting into the asset class. How have you guys scaled? What have been some challenges maybe that you've faced, but also tell us, what are some challenges that the industry faces?
Yeah, and I was, as you alluded to, like 2005, we should have bought a lot more at that time. We didn't
have bought everything.
Discover it. The internet kind of happened. Podcasts started coming out. Now I'm going to start to talk about it. But back in the day, like, and this is the funny thing, because when people come into our industry, they hear the old school, there's some old school courses like, oh, 10 cap. A 10 cap, like nowadays, you'll never see it. It's not existent, but they people have these expectations. Like there's literally a park I just saw today. I was just online. There's a park for Silicon Valley, $500 million, $500 million for one park in Silicon Valley. It's crazy. You're seeing three caps, like in Texas, California, like low three caps. We actually just put an offer in a college town property and the group that outbid us, they have a $16 billion, like different commercial real estate. And they bought it at the park at a 3 cap. And we thought we were coming in nice at a 4.5 cap. We're like, oh, we should be good. Nope. So that's the biggest challenge right now is the people that know and get invested into it are all in and they're just buying because you can't really replace them. It's really hard to get the zoning. Also, if you actually do want to develop one, like some states like Texas allow it, but you're basically developing a subdivision. The average double wide to $80,000. You spend $10,000 to set up the pads, plumbing, all the setup, plus the land. So at that point, you're basically developing, you know, cheap affordable housing. So all the people that are coming into our niche now, it's usually really well-funded, very seasoned investors. It used to be mostly mom and pop, and now it's probably still around 75-80% mom and pop, but people are getting crazy offers, like what I'm just talking about, 3 caps. So they're like, wow, this park was worth $5 million 3 years ago, now it's worth like $15 million. So people are just, you're seeing it all go into Wall Street now. So the biggest challenge for scale now is just the fact that it's become almost like you really have to find smaller deals and just kind of create your own portfolio that way. Because anything over like 15 million, you're just going to compete with Wall Street. And they're just trying to buy it. Like the Carlyle groups, all these big private equity, they're just rolling them up and they're not even make profit for 3-4 years and then they'll exit out. So it's getting super, super competitive. Like I was just posting on my Instagram today. I was like, I used to be able to say I got offered great returns. Now I can just say I have the most expensive real estate. So crazy.
So that's one of the strategies you guys are employing is saying, hey, look, we're going to stay below the buying threshold of a lot of the bigger players. I mean, yeah, that sounds like a real headwind for people trying to enter the space. I mean, that just, you can't compete with. We saw the same thing here in Memphis in the foreclosure markets. I mean, we used to go, you know, back when there was a lot more foreclosures, which I'm glad they're not, but even when there was a lot of foreclosures, you'd go and the hedge funds came to town, which is when I finally bowed out of going to the courthouse steps and buying homes, because they were paying 98 cents on the dollar for a home they'd never seen the inside of. Yeah. And they still got to remodel it. And I go, wait, time out. Like, even if I do nothing to this, I'll lose money. I can't, I just can't compete with losing money. So especially those deep of pockets. So that's really interesting. So you guys are sticking to a smaller park. What are some challenges when you stick to a smaller park though? I mean, you know, there's some unique challenges with that as well, right?
Yeah. So like you alluded to the stigma. So there is like, there's different classes. Oh, there's a skill system from like the 1970s. I forget who came up with this 1 through 5 park, 5 stars. So we try to buy 2.5 to 3.5 star. So there's still some value add because anything 2 turnaround park, it's not worth our time. And then anything way above that, it's too expensive. And the hardest part, there's only 43,210 parks in the country. So it's very limited supply. And it's like a 5-year run basically to acquire as much and then, you know, build a portfolio and exit out. So like a lot of people that have been in the space now are kind of adding other asset classes like self-storage or apartments or some other asset class, industrial, just because it's, you know, it's getting so compressed.
One of the things you started to talk about earlier was, you know, just the new development side of it. I know a lot of the places where these parks are, you know, new development for mobile home parks is prohibited or very, very difficult to get across the finish line. But even if it were allowable, what prevents people from just going out and developing a new mobile home park? I mean, we're seeing that in the multifamily space where, you know, cost to build maybe cost to acquire a 10-year-old asset, maybe 400,000, but then per unit, and then the cost to build new, maybe 325. And it's like, well, why don't we just build new versus acquire old? Like, is that same kind of thing happening in the mobile home park space?
It's just the fact that the zoning, to a lot of cities don't allow the stigma to have parks. So they'll give you any zoning if you have a park, if you want to exit out of it, but just to get the zoning, is just really difficult. It's like Texas is one of the few states that I know of that actually allows it. And then even for the manufactured home side, there's, I think, a 6 or 8 month backlog right now because of the whole lumber and, you know, supply chains. So even if you want to do that, and then the professional groups, going back to the professional groups, they literally pay people to go online and Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace to look for any used homes so they could kind of poach them out, like, hey, bring them into our park. They literally pay people full time. All they do is look for used homes to, like, you know, transport them in. So it's just getting super, super competitive. So you have to really have some, you know, strong relationships, try to build with the old mom and pop owners and try to build a relationship because, or just stay under the radar of the bigger deals. But as I alluded to, like the cap rate's compressing. So where a deal used to be $5 million 5 years ago, it was probably $15 million, right, in today's market.
That's wild. What are you guys doing to offset that additional cost to acquire?
Yeah, the value add component, which the good thing about our industry, well, it's not a 10 cap anymore. It's not an 8 cap. Like we look for anything over 6 because obviously with the Fannie Freddie, you're still 3-point spread. So you'll still find those in the smaller deals, you know, 8 to 15 million. You still get that 3-point spread. Obviously, operational efficiencies. A lot of these guys are mom and pops. They don't have a website. They don't need old school, you know, banner signs and not even like Facebook Marketplace, you know, build back water and sewer if possible, just getting rest, you know, some of the expenses down. Increasing rent. So like the way to add value is just like ethically raise rents, obviously add some new, you know, amenities and beautify the entryway and the streets and stuff like that. So the value add is buying the middle, you know, 2.5, 3.5 star under the radar of the big funds, and then just a value add in there. So that's the only way you're going to make money nowadays. Anything over 20 million, you're just going to get like a 3 cap. So
yeah, that's really, really fascinating. What are some opportunities that you see or some good things maybe that aren't headwinds, but some favorable kind of tailwinds that the mobile home park industry face or has, I should say?
Well, I think now this thing has changed. So now, like, you know, people like me on these podcasts, people are talking about it. So it's not looked at like when I mentioned to you like 15 years ago, people now, the people that used to laugh are like, how do I get involved? So it's changed that dynamic. And I think the fact that we are still affordable housing, so even if we acquire and the Wall Street's acquiring, if you look at it, it's still, you know, the average mobile home is, the brand new is 50 for single, 80 for double. A used mobile home, depending on market, 15 to 20,000. And the average national rent's like $400, I think, right now, if you take out some of the coastal cities. So it's usually a third of the price. You know, housing's skyrocketing, the numbers coming back down, but the cost of housing is so expensive nowadays for most people. Average apartment rents have gone up to like $1,300, $1,400 across the country. And so if you're $500 and you're living on Social Security, 50% of the people are senior citizens, baby boomers, it's a place where they could still have a, you know, quaint, nice, you know, if it's a well-run park, quaint, nice, affordable housing. So even if their rents go up $100, $150, and you're still providing something that the cities don't want, and you're still providing affordable housing for a third the cost or half the cost. And that's the beauty about it, because you still, at the end of the day, you're still really providing something that people need. So that's the cool, that's what I like about it the best.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, those are all things that are absolutely incredible. What do you think? I mean, with the stigma changing, let me ask this, the stigma changing and, you know, the public perception of mobile home parks getting better, why don't we see more zoning changing to allow for them such that new development could come online?
And that's kind of like, if you listen to the Manufacturer Association and then also the, you know, mobile home manufacturers, they're both, that's kind of what they're saying. Like, why should we not allow this? But it's just kind of, the cities are so, you know, set in their ways in the bureaucratic process. And Texas is more, you know, free thinking. And I think some other states are starting to lean that way. But yeah, if you could provide affordable housing where people, and there was even like a thing on realtor.com recently, I just read that actually for the last 8 years, mobile homes have actually appreciated just because the market's going up. Like, it always was a depreciating asset, especially in the, you know, the 90s when people got like crazy loans for them. It was like a big boom that time. Right. But now they've actually done a case study over the last 8 years. Just because of the housing has gone up, and just you kind of just carry it up, and it's actually appreciated. Mobile homes, it was literally in realtor.com, if you Google this, mobile homes have actually appreciated more than the average single family, which I even kind of think is crazy. I have a course to teach people how to play mobile homes, but like that just kind of backs this whole need for affordable housing. And like, just think of, you know, it's kind of like arbitrage, like think outside the box, and whatever you've learned, you know, the world's changing so fast nowadays, just take some of this data in and actually analyze and see, okay, this is why it makes sense. And this is why this is happening. But it's so crazy, the fact that even mobile homes are appreciating, not just the parks.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know if that's an effect of the inflation of our money. You know, you got two things. When you have inflation, you also have constrained supply.
Yep.
So, and thirdly, you have demand. So there's this weird trifecta of things that's just causing even used mobile home parks to go up, I mean, in price. And you're seeing that across used cars. You're seeing that, I mean, the RV industry is a close cousin to mobile homes. Even there, used RVs that are 10, 15 years old are now worth 50% more than they were 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's great. That's industry's booming too. Because COVID kind of changed a lot of things, because now people want to spend time with families, and it's lockdown. So like, would you just travel the country? The school's online anyway. And so that's what made the RV industry boom at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And those are all very, very closely related. And actually, you know, manufacturing wise, you go like this, you know, northern central Indiana, like you get a lot of the RV builders, you get a lot of the manufactured housing builders. I mean, I don't know why I think of that in particular, maybe because it's where I grew up, but it, you see a lot of those, you know, industries that are booming, but also way behind. So what are you guys doing? I mean, I'm imagining, you know, that you guys, well, maybe I'll just ask a question as opposed to asking a leading question. Do you guys do park-owned homes, or do you guys just do lot rent?
Well, you always prefer just to basically own the land and just rent the lots out. And even the Fannie Freddie, the Duty to Serve Act, which is it has to allocate 37% towards affordable housing. One of the stipulations is it has to be like less than 25 park-owned homes, depending on the size of the park. So ideally, you want them to own, the tenant to own the homes, you know, and then you just rent out the, you know, lots, basically. So you just want the, you know, basically the cash flow and not having the headache. So it's kind of, what makes people appealing to this industry is like, hey, it's like all the same premise of an apartment building, a lot less expenses, usually about 15, 20 basis points lower because you don't own the homes.
Right. So how are you guys filling vacant lots then? What's a good strategy for that?
It's super, like you want to buy a park that's already full. It's the easiest solution. Just buy a nicer asset, because it's like I said, there's groups out there. They literally pay people full time to, you know, scour the internet and try to find brand new homes or poaching homes. So,
yeah, that's a good caveat emptor there for people looking at vacant lots or, you know, vacant parks. I'm thinking of one. There was one here recently that came up in one of our submarkets, and it was a smaller park, maybe 25 or 30. It was family owned. You know, she was the last owner and was, you know, very late stages of life. And there was one home out of like the 25 or 30 that was there. The place was vacant, and they were still asking, what was it, you know, $30,000 a pad. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And you're confirming it, because you go, wait, you can't even get houses. Who cares if you even got it for free? It's still going to be a very hard challenge to get houses on that vacant piece of land. So that's really interesting timing.
Yeah. And even like, if you look at Texas right now, which is even crazier, lots that were like 50 to 60,000 a lot is going for, I'm seeing stuff, 100, 120 thousand per lot right now. It's like crazy. And like Houston and Austin, like even Elon right now has his own, the Starlight City, whatever it's called, his mobile RV park. That's where he lives, apparently. So it's crazy nowadays.
It is, man. It's fascinating to watch industries like this and how they evolve and change. You've certainly shared a lot with us today that I think is very, you know, industry specific and very timely, but also I think just a very clear picture of where we are in this industry right now. So thanks for doing that. Let's jump here into the final four questions, Jonathan. What is one digital tool or resource you find you can't live without?
I would say just it's generic, but my phone, because every app and every software, because I can't just have just not one software. I have to have hundreds of every software I use. Like I have a digital marketing agency on the side too. So I use every app basically and software possible.
That's fantastic. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, and maybe we'll keep it as it particularly applies to mobile home parks, what would that mistake be? And then how would you avoid it?
I think for one, just having the right expectations, because people sometimes even they reach out to a fund, they're like, they have the old numbers on mine, and just understanding it's a whole, like you just alluded to, it's a whole different world right now. And if they were personally going to go buy the first part, just make sure you do the due diligence, make sure the zoning is going to transfer, see what the real estate tax is, because maybe Farmer Joe who developed the park was really in with the city, but once you take it over and you're from like a big city or outside, they're like, all of a sudden those real estate taxes are supposed to be, you know, $10,000-$20,000, are like $40,000 now. So that kind of factor that into it. And then also just basically do your due diligence and really kind of, if you're going to get into the industry, just help the industry grow. You need more people that are going to help the industry grow in a bright light, basically.
That's fantastic. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Well, I guess like in my digital agency, I actually have a scholarship for HVAC students. So it's kind of like mobile home parks and like in the plumbing and HVAC industry is a shortage of workers. And so what I do is I take a portion of my revenue to go back to college kids. And then I also do like homeless dog events I do a bunch of different charity work, but those are my two biggest charity events I'm a part of.
Yeah. And I think if I'm not mistaken, you have one of the largest, what do you call it, non-company backed dog events in Chicago.
Yeah,
for homeless dogs. So that's really, really cool, man. I love that. And I also love the HVAC school sponsorship. The need in skilled trades is so great. I mean, that's, yeah, fantastic. I love what you're doing there. John, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. Yeah. Midwest Park Capital is the fund. We're doing one-off some deals right now. Our next raise will probably be this fall, depending on when you hear this, in 2022. I also, if you're an accredited investor, have a mobile home wealth academy, which teaches people how to find wholesale mobile homes, but also how to get their first park, or just Facebook or Instagram, Jonathan Tuttle.
Gotcha. Okay. Real quick. Can you very quickly or very slowly actually tell us the name of the mobile home? What was it where the education component you have?
Mobile Home Wealth Academy.
Mobile Home Wealth Academy, and then the name of your website.
That's Mobile Home Wealth Academy for that website. And then for the fund, Midwest Park Capital.
West Park Capital. Okay, cool. Jonathan, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.